This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with Karen Tamley, director of Access Living in Chicago. But first, disability news for the week of November 11th, 2024. With former President Donald Trump impending return to the White House, advocates are bracing for major changes to Medicaid and other programs that people with disabilities rely on. Though the campaign spent little energy on disability issues, advocates say that Trump's record during his first term offers reasons to worry. According to Eric Buhlman, Deputy Executive Director for Public Policy at the National Disability Rights Network, quote, "Based on actions taken during the first Trump administration, we are concerned with what the election will mean to the funding and structure of many important programs for people with disabilities like Medicaid, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act funding, enforcement of civil rights laws, among others. Efforts to radically restructure Medicaid and pay for tax cuts for corporations by cutting other programs are things we saw last time and expect to be tried again," end quote. Potential policy changes are detailed in Project 2025, a conservative playbook from the Heritage Foundation that is viewed as a likely plan for Trump's second term. The Consortium for Constituents with Disabilities, a coalition of national disability organizations, was raising alarm bells about Project 2025 prior to the election. They specifically mentioned proposals to restructure Medicaid and impose lifetime eligibility limits on the government health program, big changes to how special education is funded, as well as a plan to eliminate the U.S. Department of Education that would weaken civil rights protections for people with disabilities. Kim Machino, Vice President of Public Policy at the Autism Society of America, said her group is particularly concerned about efforts by the Trump administration to retool healthcare policies that benefit people with disabilities. She said, quote, "The Affordable Care Act has been life-changing for everyone, especially those with pre-existing conditions such as autism. Medicaid is literally a lifeline for people with disabilities who depend on home and community-based supports to live with their families, work in the community, and stay out of more expensive institutions. We fought back attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and proposals to cut Medicaid before. If similar proposals come forward in the new Congress, we will be ready to defend them again." Also, Zoe Gross, Director of Advocacy at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, said advocates are concerned about possible misinformation by the government regarding autism and vaccines. Trump has reportedly promised a role in his administration to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has spent years speaking out about a link between the two, despite research finding no connection. During the campaign, Trump faced backlash from disability advocates and members of both political parties for referring to Harris as, quote, "mentally impaired" and, quote, "mentally disabled." And some of you may remember a story where Trump's nephew, Fred C. Trump III, alleged that the former president told him that people like his son, who has intellectual and developmental disabilities, quote, "should just die." Even so, Marie Town, president and CEO of the American Association of People with Disabilities, says she's optimistic that finding common ground is possible. She said, quote, "Regardless of who won, many disabled people have long felt that Social Security and Medicaid's current levels of function have left a lot to be desired. It's possible that Trump will be open to some of the changes the community has hoped for in those programs. We hope we are all able to move forward and turn a new leaf to create the most positive working environment possible," end quote. The state of Colorado has settled a federal lawsuit that claims state health officials illegally segregated too many people with disabilities. The U.S. Department of Justice announced the settlement this month. Colorado officials committed to taking the following actions before February 2026. As a result, Colorado will help thousands of nursing facility residents move, as well as identify people at risk of unnecessary confinement. They have also agreed to provide information needed to make choices and to help people with disabilities find accessible, affordable housing, connect people with Medicaid long-term care services, increase opportunities for people with disabilities to control their care, and to better support family caregivers. The settlement, according to Assistant U.S. Attorney General Kristen Clark, quote, sends the message that people with disabilities deserve the same kinds of lives as others and makes clear that our family members, friends, and neighbors with disabilities add value to our lives and strengthen our communities when they can receive the services they need right inside their own home, end quote. And finally, new research intends to follow thousands of people with Down syndrome from birth to adulthood to learn more about the chromosomal disorder. The project from the National Institutes of Health, known as the Down Syndrome Cohort Development Program, will collect biological samples, health information, and other data provided to researchers anonymously, said Dr. Diana Bianchi, director of NIH's Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, quote, the goal of the new program is to deepen our understanding of Down syndrome, accelerate knowledge of health conditions that more commonly affect those with Down syndrome, and ultimately improve the quality of life for individuals and their families. The initiative initial plans to start recruiting participants in July of 2025. The program will be coordinated out of a center in North Carolina with research sites located at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, the University of Colorado Denver, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Washington University in St. Louis. The new project is part of NIH's INCLUDE project that focuses on health and quality of life issues for people with Down syndrome and co-occurring conditions like Alzheimer's disease, autism, cataracts, celiac disease, congenital heart disease, and diabetes. And that's the news for this week.
It's not right, but it's okay. I'm gonna make it anyway. Pack your bag up and leave. Don't you dare come running back to me. It's not right, but it's okay. I'm gonna make it anyway. Close the door behind you, leave your key. Rather be alone than unhappy.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm excited to introduce you to a first-time guest on the program, Karen Tamley, who is the president and the CEO of Access Living, one of the big and very important centers for independent living in the state of Illinois. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why don't we talk a little bit about who you are and how you ended up at Access Living doing the work that you're doing? What brought you to that position in life?
Yeah, so I was born with a disability. I have used a wheelchair all of my life. And, you know, I really started my career out in Washington, D.C., where I worked for a disability rights attorney. And that's what really got me started, learning, understanding, and really desiring to work in the disability movement. From there, I worked at another Center for Independent Living in Colorado. And then in 1996, if you can believe it, I was offered a job at Access Living and moved to Chicago, doing housing advocacy and policy work.
After that history, I believe that you were snatched up by Access Living. But yeah, sorry for the interruption. You go ahead.
No. I ended up after that taking a couple of other positions in within the organization, including becoming the director of programs. And then in 2005, I was appointed by then-Mayor Daley, the mayor of Chicago, to serve in his cabinet as the commissioner for the Chicago Mayor's Office for People with Disabilities. I served in that role for 14 years under three different mayors, and then came back in the role of CEO for Access Living in January of 2020.
So how's it been so far?
It's been amazing. I feel like I'm coming back to my roots, to my home in many ways. It's really where I got so much of my professional and career experience was at Access Living. And, you know, I think for the beginning for me, it was a little tough because I started in my new role a week before the world closed down for the pandemic. So for the first 2 years of my role as CEO was very focused on addressing, you know, COVID-19 crisis and its impact on our community. And, you know, it was much more challenging and difficult to get to know my staff, community partners, and other leaders because we were all working virtually. But it was also a time that was, in some ways, a silver lining because it allowed us to really hit a reset button and really think and rethink about the work we're doing. And it led to a new strategic plan that I'm really excited about.
Oh, we'll definitely have to talk about that. But let's talk a minute about Access Living. And I did mention, you know, that it is a center for independent living, as is PACE Incorporated here in the Champaign-Urbana area, much smaller agency. Is your work similar at Access Living?
It is. So Access Living is one of the 22 centers for independent living in Illinois. We do provide all the same core services that all the centers for independent living provide. That includes information referral, independent living skills training, peer support, and both individual and systemic advocacy, as well as transition services for those either moving out of nursing homes or institutions into the community or transitioning from high school to post-secondary or independent living for young people. So we all provide those same five core services, but I think every center for independent living is a little bit different. We're different because we're located in different communities. We represent and serve different geographies. So a center for independent living like Access Living, that's a very urban center for independent living, may have slightly different types of services, different challenges, different opportunities. So we're all a bit different in the ways in which we address and serve our community. So, for example, you know, in a rural community versus an urban, issues like transportation or housing might look different in terms of our approach or our service delivery. In Chicago, for example, we are currently about to launch a program supporting survivors of gun violence who have become disabled that's so prevalent in our urban area that may not as much impact another community in our state. So my point is really that centers really are purposefully designed to address the issues in the communities and the needs of people with disabilities that they are located in and serve.
And I suppose since you are located in Chicago, that Access Living is the largest agency of its type in the state. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yes, we are. So we were one of the first 10 centers for independent living in the country. We were founded in 1980, so we are now 44 years old. Mm-hmm. And we started as a very small storefront organization and now have our own building and almost 80 staff. So we've grown significantly over the last 44 years. And really doing so many great and diverse services and advocacy initiatives.
And now that COVID is essentially over. It's not completely over, obviously, but as you move into thinking about other areas and you say you've developed this strategic plan, what are now some of the areas of focus that are taking the place of all the work that you did with COVID and holding your staff together for 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the pandemic was incredibly informative in terms of our refocus on some of the critical issues that were really that really rose to the surface during the pandemic. One, I would say, just economic disparities. We saw the real disparities in folks with disabilities during the pandemic, and that really led us to now have a very, very critical focus on addressing poverty in our community. Mm-hmm. We know poverty is very much of a through line. So we launched an economic justice initiative that is tackling poverty from both a systemic policy angle, but also from a direct services angle. So we augmented some of our direct services to help folks with disabilities with financial literacy and credit repair, building savings accounts, getting into ABLE accounts, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're also working at the state level to address systemic barriers. So the work on the Dignity and Pay Act to eliminate subminimum wage is a big legislative focus of ours in coalition with many of our partners across the state, and other legislative priorities that will help address and alleviate poverty in the disability community. So economic justice is one. The digital divide is a second new strategic priority. During the pandemic, we saw so many of our community that just didn't have access to to devices, to be on Zoom and Teams and other virtual platforms. And so we felt that we really needed to do something. We launched a pilot where we distributed laptops to our consumers. We have received funding over the last year to really expand that program. So not only are we able to give devices to folks with disabilities in need, but we designed and are starting to implement a 5-week digital literacy course that is really supporting independent living through the use of computers and other devices. So that is going great. We have a waiting list, actually, for that program. And then I would also say that, equity in the area of healthcare was really, really something that was exposed during the pandemic. And so we are putting an increased focus on health equity. We know that disabled people fare worse than those without disabilities when trying to access healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And, we definitely saw that during COVID. And we just believe that there's a lot more that can be done, both in terms of opening up our healthcare systems to more access and opportunity for folks with disabilities. And that includes mental health. We're also launched a policy initiative around addressing mental health as well, because that was really rose to the top as one of the number one issues that our consumers were facing during the pandemic. So I would say those are some of the top priorities that we're now focused on.
And with your strategic plan, what are kind of the areas of focus that you're looking at for future development or changes to Access Living?
Yeah, so we want to expand our footprint into some of our more underserved communities of Chicago. Our city is large, and mm-hmm. we believe that we can do more to meet people where they're at. So that is one of our priorities that we're working on for 2025 and beyond. And then actually on Thursday, we're going to announce a new program that we're launching, and that is a program to support survivors of gun violence who have become disabled. We are seeing a dramatic increase in gun violence, not just in Chicago, but across the country. And while the focus on prevention is really critical, we felt that there hasn't been enough conversation on supporting survivors who have disability-related needs. And so we spent the last year and a half doing listening sessions with over 150 survivors about what kinds of needs do they have post-injury, where are services falling short for the community. And so we're going to release a paper on Thursday that will detail both the findings of our listening sessions, but also a set of recommendations for what we'd like to see. So this is a new program that we're going to be launching. We're hiring our first staff person that's coming on in the next few weeks. And so we're going to be able to provide more specific, tailored services to the community of survivors of gun violence who are disabled in Chicago.
That sounds totally amazing. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about what are the biggest challenges in being the president and CEO of Access Living? And in turn, what are the biggest joys of that position?
I would say, the biggest joys, I'll just start with that, is just seeing the impact that we are able to make every day. And whether that is on an individual basis, helping someone to get access to an apartment that they weren't previously able to do so, to be able to get a housing voucher, all those kind of little successes, moving someone out of a nursing home who is getting their own place for the first time, mm-hmm. those types of things, to the systemic and big policy issues, the legislative wins, and just the real impact that we're having on changing people's lives. To me, that is what gives me the greatest joy and makes me the most proud to be in my role as CEO of Access Living. I think the challenges are always, the number of issues that come at us. I always say that disability really touches everything we do, right? And there's always an accessibility or a disability angle to any policy, to any initiative, and so there's just constantly things coming at us, either to work towards, or to say that, this is not a good policy or a piece of legislation that we have to work to prevent. And so there's always things that are coming at you all the time, every day, that keeps you really, really busy.
I believe
and
that.
And I just also think just the nature of running a big organization, that always has challenges. But I would say that the joys and the things I'm proud of in terms of our successes far outweigh the challenges.
Yeah. And I would think, 80 plus people working for Access Living, it's got to be a challenge trying to provide direction to people who are, at least for the few people that I know who work at Access Living, they are passionate. They're motivated, they're committed to the work that they do, and they have done some fantastic things. But as passionate and committed as they are, they might be running off in directions that don't really serve Access Living quite so well sometimes. Right?
We have some of the most dedicated staff that I've ever seen. I mean, people who are truly, truly committed their careers to disability rights, to advancing opportunities for people with disabilities. And so, again, that's the kind of thing that just really makes me so proud every day.
Yeah. And the challenge, from what I was hearing from you, is that it's really the systemic stuff that is the challenge. And, trying to make changes in the way that the legislature does business in regard to people with disabilities, or even the city of Chicago, which give them credit for having their council that they've had for many, many years up there, the mayor's council. I have my own frustrations working with the incremental changes that come from the state of Illinois, and it's just not nearly fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, not every day is a win, and a lot of our initiatives that we're working on are long-term initiatives. Like you said, they don't happen overnight. They take patience and perseverance, but they're still important nonetheless, and we just have to keep at it.
Yeah, it's patience, perseverance, and oftentimes a lawsuit. you know, is the way it works in Illinois. So, yeah. So if people want to get more information about Access Living, where should they go?
They can go to our website, accessliving.org. So all of our programs, services, upcoming events are on there. You can sign up for our advocacy newsletter. That's a great way to stay in touch with all of what we're doing. And, all of our phone numbers for our services are on there. So if folks don't have digital access, they can give us a call and reach us there. 312-640-2100 is our number.
Okay. And is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention?
I think you covered a lot of what we do, but I mean, I just think that the role of Access Living and all the Centers for Independent Living in Illinois are absolutely critical. You know, disability is really universal, right? One in four of us have some form of disability, and I always talk about the work we're doing now isn't just about those of us with, living with disabilities currently. It's really about all of us in the future and what we want to see our world to be, right? How can we all collectively create a more accessible and inclusive world for everyone, not just now, but into the future? So I would just say that, you know, disability is universal, and we need the work of Centers for Independent Living now more than ever.
Absolutely. That is so well said. And I really do believe that, you know, you may not have been born with a disability, but it does touch you in your life somewhere. And if it hasn't yet, it will. So
absolutely,
you need to, you know, pay attention to the issues and to let people know that there are those opportunities out there for advocacy and for change. So thank you so much for your work, Karen. And that website, again, if people want to learn more, is?
Accessliving.org.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure meeting you, even if over the phone. I hope to meet you in person someday soon. So thanks again for joining me. Karen Tamley, President and CEO of Access Living in Chicago. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stand my ground. Dragging me down, gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down.
This hour of programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by The Canopy Club, hosting live music and events within Champaign-Urbana. The Canopy Club offers a variety of music ranging from rock to electronic, hip-hop, indie, theme nights, and anything in between. Find more information on upcoming events at canopyclub.com or by following The Canopy Club on all social media platforms.
You are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio. But before that, just one more reminder that we are community radio. We are volunteer-operated, listener-supported radio right here in the middle of Champaign-Urbana. We need your support to keep going, so please go to our website at weft.org and make a donation, whether a small one or a big one. It doesn't matter, as long as we know that we have the community support that we need to keep going strong. We've been on the air for 44 years and plan another 44 to go. So help us out. Again, that website is weft.org. And just